Dear listener, before we start today's episode, I want to tell you about a resource I've created, which I want to share with you for free. I'll tell you what it is and how to get it. If you're not already writing tests for your Rails code, you're probably aware that testing can help you ship your work faster and with fewer defects. Because testing is such an in-demand skill, but since so few developers know how to do it properly, I've created a resource for you called The Beginner's Guide to Rails Testing. This guide is a short, downloadable book which answers the most common Rails testing questions that beginners tend to have, including, which testing framework should I use, RSpec or Minitest? What level of test coverage should I shoot for? What are the different kinds of Rails tests? What are all the Rails testing tools, and how do I use them? My guide covers these questions and several others. To get the Beginner's Guide to Rails Testing, go to railstestingguide.com. Now on to the episode. Hey, today I'm here with Anthony Campolo, Redwood JS Core Advocate. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jason. Really happy to be here. I've been listening to the podcast for a while, and it's going to be cool to kind of talk about some of these ideas that, you know, you talk about a lot of things I find very interesting, even though I'm not actually a Rails developer at all. So I'm happy that you've brought me onto the show.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here, and it's nice to hear that you're interested in the things I say. It's nice to have somebody interested in the things I say. I tell my wife things, both computer stuff and just things in general, and she's generally not very interested. And so at least Anthony's interested. I got one person.
At least one.
Okay, so we're going to be talking about Redwood JS, and I think I was like ever so peripherally familiar with Redwood JS from before because the creator of it is Tom Preston Warner, if I'm getting his name right, one of the co-founders of GitHub. I think I might have seen like he did an interview with Adam Wavin on Full Stack Radio. I don't think I listened to it, but I think I saw that one, or maybe I listened to part of it. So for an ignoramus like myself, how would you convey what Redwood JS is?
So Redwood JS is a full stack JavaScript framework. And it's funny that you say you had first heard that he had done an interview on Full Stack Radio, because I'm someone who listens to tons of podcasts, and I heard Tom explain Redwood on many, many podcasts. And it's kind of what got me interested in it in the first place. And so to give just like a real quick high-level overview, it's a way of combining essentially React, GraphQL, and Prisma with a database in a way that gives you a full stack application that's using kind of all this newer JavaScript single page application type technology and integrating in a way that makes it nice to work with and coherent with a convention over configuration opinionated kind of idea.
Okay, so I know what React is. I know what GraphQL is. I don't know what Prisma is. Can you explain that part?
Yeah, Prisma will be very simple for you to understand. It is basically Active Record. So Prisma, it is what is doing the ORM stuff. They went through a soul searching over the course of this year about whether to call themselves an ORM or not. They were trying to call themselves a query builder for the longest time. The idea being that a query builder, slightly lower level, it's really just generating a bunch of SQL for you. And it was really confusing for people because most people don't really know what a query builder is, but a decent amount of people know what an ORM is. And so they eventually decided to start calling themselves a next generation ORM. That is the terminology they have landed on. So basically it's just a way to, you have a schema, you have a Prisma schema, which defines what database you're using, which is just going to be a different kind of relational database. It's either going to be Postgres, MySQL, or SQLite. and then you define a bunch of models. So like if you have a post model, it'll have ID, title, body created at, and then that's pretty much it. And then that is able to do all of the mapping from your objects to your relations. So Prisma used to be a really heavy GraphQL kind of tool when it was just Prisma 1. We're using Prisma 2 now, which actually has nothing to do with GraphQL. It's just an ORM kind of tool, and Redwood is handling the actual GraphQL stuff. So there's other frameworks that also use Prisma, but don't necessarily use it in like a GraphQL kind of way. So it's a really interesting tool. It's really flexible, and it's like an interesting kind of like new way of thinking about like what an ORM tool can be.
So you have React at the very like most client facing end, and then at the very bottom, maybe not the very bottom, but you have PostgreSQL. Maybe you have the operating system at the very bottom, but you know, at the bottom of the application stack, you have PostgreSQL. What about in between React and in Prisma, the ORM, or you know, whatever you want to call it? Is it like a Node application? What's that part of it?
Yeah, so it's Babel kind of at the very bottom of the stack, because it is still just like React and JavaScript, and it's kind of handling all the GraphQL mapping for you, so you don't really have to. So it has Apollo baked into it. So let me actually step back and let me first explain the project structure. So you want to think of it as a monorepo with two folders. You have your web folder and your API folder. So if you've ever used a Create React app, then that's like the web folder. That's just like a React front end, anything that you would be able to just like create a React app or do like a Gatsby or Next kind of thing and throw that up on Netlify. Like that's your front end part. And then your back end part, that then splits into two. One is the Prisma stuff and one is the GraphQL stuff. So that's basically how you want to think about your project. Is it's a full stack project. So you have a front end and a back end. But then your backend itself is then decoupled into two pieces, your actual database piece and then your GraphQL piece.
Okay. And by the way, I want to interject something. Dear listener, you might be listening and you think, wait a second, this doesn't have anything to do with Rails like at all. And yeah, that's totally true. Because I think it's like healthy to have an awareness of what's going on in other development ecosystems and other communities and stuff like that. There's this quote that I like to share, which I've probably shared on this podcast before, which is there's an old fish and a young fish swimming in the water one day. And the old fish asks the young fish, how's the water today? And the young fish says, what's water? And it's like, if you only ever spend your time in one ecosystem, then you're not going to know what's what. Or kind of like if you've lived your whole life in America, it takes visiting some other, you know, you live in America your whole life and somebody's like, what's America like? And you're like, I don't know. It's just like the default country. But that's not really it. And you have to like go somewhere else and see what it's like somewhere else and then come back. And they're like, oh yeah, I went to this other place and it's different over there. They don't have like traffic laws. They just drive all over the place crazy. It's different in different places. And so America's different in this way. So all that is to say, this is why I'm having Anthony on the show to talk about this JavaScript thing that has nothing to do with Rails, to hopefully give us a little bit of perspective. Okay, Anthony, now that I've said that, where
and
do
I'll
you
say
think
that actually has quite a lot to do with Rails? I would say that to say it has nothing to do with Rails is actually not correct at all, because it was created by an old school Rails developer. So I would say it actually has quite a lot to do with Rails.
Sure. Yeah, I would buy that. So having said those things, Where should we take this next? What do you think would be the next concept to explain relating to Redwood?
Sure. So first off, I would point out that I had also heard that This Is Water from David Foster Wallace wrote a whole essay. I don't know if you know David Foster Wallace.
Oh, he's yeah,
also
yeah.
Author mm-hmm. Infinite Jest. Yeah, this is something that I once referenced on my older podcast before I did my current podcast. I originally got into podcasting through like music, because I was a music major back in the day. But anyway, the next thing you really want to know about Redwood is deployment. The idea is really important, because so Tom, the creator of Redwood, going back to old school Rails developer, Tom created GitHub with Rails. So he scaled one of the largest Rails applications in history and felt a lot of the pain of scaling Rails. and then went on to create this company called Chatterbug with Scott Chacon, another early GitHub creator. And Chatterbug is a language learning platform, and they had a React front end speaking GraphQL to a Rails back end. So that's why I say like this actually, this all has a lot to do with Rails. So
yeah. And sorry, I want to jump on something you said and make a comment. You mentioned the pain of scaling Rails. And I don't know like the history of GitHub's scaling story and stuff like that. And I'm sure there was scaling pain, and I'm sure there was Ruby and Rails specific scaling pain. What I don't want is I don't want any like junior developer to hear that and draw the conclusion that Rails can't scale, because it may be true that Rails has a hard time scaling to GitHub scale, but GitHub scale is fucking crazy. And if you get there, like, good for you. Like, you can deal with those problems at that point. The fact that Rails might have trouble scaling to GitHub scale certainly doesn't mean that Rails is a slow choice for like your new fresh app that you're creating today that's going to have like six users for the next 2 years or whatever. So I just wanted to add my obligatory like watch out for the Rails doesn't scale comment, because however true it might be in certain situations, it might be less true in other situations.
Yeah, I think that's completely true, and it's a good call out. And it's one of those things like we try and compress so much information into our language when we talk about these things. This is why like I love having these kind of like conversations with people in different communities, because it's totally true. And it's not the idea that Rails can't scale. It's the idea that what if we could never have to even think about needing to scale Rails? Like, what if we could hit GitHub level and just not have to worry about it? Because you're saying like there is that small subset of applications that will scale to a level where you're like, oh no, like there's a problem here. Like this monolith just doesn't work anymore. It's a very, very rare situation, but it could happen. So the idea is being, what if you're just set up for that no matter what, out of the box, just so you'd never have to worry about it. You could get that success and not even have to trip about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is one of the like philosophies or components of Redwood?
Yes. So getting into, I was just about to start talking about deployment. So this is a really good segue. This is the idea of being serverless by default. So when I say serverless to you, what does that word like trigger in your mind?
Well, the facetious answer that I want to give is I saw this like t-shirt or something or sticker. It said, it had like a sad cloud, it was like a crying cloud. And it said serverless is just somebody else's computer. So, yeah. But also I just actually don't really know. I don't really understand what that term means. So I'm not even going to try to like say my like garbled muddy conception that I have in my head. How do you define that term?
Yeah, it's a lot less complicated than people make it. I would take it back a step and say, do you know what AWS Lambdas are?
Kind of. My understanding of Lambdas is like you can spin up a server kind of on demand and have it run like this specific service, but it's a limited thing as opposed to like a web service in a traditional web server that you'd have running all the time and serving a full application.
Yeah, you nailed it. It's the idea that it's this more event-based programming model to where it just takes in events and triggers functions. But like you say, it's not a server that is always on. So you're only paying for the utilization of specific function invocations. That is the idea. And that's why it can be extremely economically useful if you know how to architect your application in a way where you know exactly what functions are being triggered, how much they need to be triggered, how much time they're going to take, and you can just kind of optimize around all of those different metrics in a way that lets you like not to worry about scaling it because it can just keep going up, but also not even have to pay for it until you start hitting millions of invocations.
Okay. And at what stage does that come into the picture, and how do you architect that? Because what I'm used to is like, you have one or more servers, and all those servers are running the same application. And scaling horizontally is when you just add more servers. And then, of course, there's the scaling in terms of like your application gets slow because it's doing more stuff and you have to like change the code in order to make it faster, that's a different kind of scaling. But when in the picture would you bring serverless into the picture?
So this is what makes Redwood interesting. So it's the opposite. It starts serverless, and the question is, when do you bring servers into the mix? Because it's already serverless by default, the way a project comes out of the box. And then if you decide at some point you actually need a server, then you can run it actually on a container. You can run it on something like Fargate. But it starts out just serverless. So what I mean by that is that what your whole project is at the end of the day, I was talking about how you have your React front end, and then you have your whole API folder back end, which is a whole bunch of Prisma stuff and a whole bunch of GraphQL stuff. All the Prisma stuff and all the GraphQL stuff get shoved into one giant AWS Lambda. So I say these AWS Lambdas are like these things that just respond to functions, incoming events. The idea isn't to bring up your application to a whole bunch of different Lambdas that do a whole bunch of different things. The idea is to shove your entire application into a giant single function that is a Lambda, and that is your monolith.
I'm so glad that you said that, because until now I thought you were crazy. And so that's a much better way to do it, because like, I'm like, wait, is this guy advocating you have like 8 different Lambdas, like hosting, you do like microservices from day one and all this stuff? No, you're saying just put your whole application on a Lambda and that's how you do it. That I can buy.
It's the exact opposite of a microservice. This, we are trying to get as far away from microservices as possible.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. And what does that look like? So I assume you are, and I certainly am, I'm an advocate of the idea of a walking skeleton. You deploy to production on day one so that you do all that hard, mysterious work right away. And then after that, everything's just incremental. Every deployment after that is a non-event. So what is involved in getting an actual Redwood application online? And do you have, so with Rails, you can host it like any number of ways. You can use any cloud provider you want. And like even inside of a cloud provider, like let's say AWS, you can deploy it to EC2, Elastic Beanstalk, which side note is a bad choice. Or you can do ECS and Fargate and all that stuff, or something else. There's all these different options, and there's not really one standard golden path. What about with Redwood? Is it similar where your options are kind of unlimited?
I wouldn't say they're unlimited, but they're definitely varied and expanding and getting more and more complicated. It was originally architected around Netlify for your front end and Heroku Postgres for your back end. So if you follow the canonical tutorial, which is how almost everyone who gets into Redwood gets into it, they go through a tutorial that basically walks them through it. It's very similar to what a lot of Rails developers did, who went through a Rails tutorial that walks them through how to build a Rails project. It's the same idea. You basically build out a whole Redwood project. At the end, you deploy your React front end, so your web folder and your API folder and all that kind of stuff. Like your whole project actually is deployed into the Netlify front end. But then you also just spin up this Heroku Postgres database on the side, grab an environment variable, and put it into your Netlify dashboard. And so by doing that, you connect your front end on Netlify to your back end, which is hosted on Heroku Postgres. And then that's your whole application. But
sorry,
if you want
I want to stop you and ask a question. And I can't believe how much I'm revealing my ignorance in this episode. But what is Netlify? I've heard of it. I have no idea what it is.
Do you know what GitHub Pages is?
Yeah.
Imagine you had GitHub Pages with 1,000 more features. That's Netlify.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's a way to host your static front end, but also do a billion other things, because now that we're building this whole quote-unquote Jamstack thing, Jamstack is just static sites to the nth degree with a million services around it and APIs and all this really complicated stuff to get it to work. So Redwood's trying to simplify all that.
Okay. Okay, got it. So you said Netlify on the front end and then Heroku Postgres on the back end.
But it doesn't have to be that necessarily.
Doesn't There's, have to be. Oh, and let me ask this too. Sorry, I keep interrupting.
Yeah,
but
that's okay.
is there like the Redwood tutorial, is that like part of the official Redwood docs? Like the same people who created the Redwood framework made the Redwood tutorial?
I'm actually really glad you asked that question, because Redwood has pioneered something that they are actually calling tutorial-driven development, which is the idea that the tutorial is what drives the entire project. So the tutorial is what they put more work into than almost any other part of the project. They actually wrote the tutorial first and have built the framework around it. So yes, the core team did do the tutorial. The tutorials actually integrate in the project in a way that I don't think any other project has really ever done before.
That's amazing, because funny enough, like, I think the Ruby on Rails documentation is pretty good, but there is no tutorial that's made by the same people who created Rails. The kind of de facto standard is Michael Hartl's Ruby on Rails tutorial, which is great.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a great tutorial. I went through it, and I, like, recommend it to everybody. But it's kind of funny how there's not one that's put together by the Rails people. And, like, there is a certain, like, it's just very nice when the same people who create a framework create the tutorial for it, provided, of course, that they do a good job with it. But when all those things are true, it's just really nice.
Yeah, I think the Vue community has done a really good job with their documentation and tutorials. They're definitely another that I would point out that has, like, really, really invested in that aspect. But what's cool about Redwood is because it's such, like, a complicated framework, there's so many pieces to it. You have to kind of introduce someone to it, like, kind of piece by piece. So, like, you start by just building out the React part. You don't worry about Prisma. You don't worry about GraphQL. You don't worry about any of that. First, you're just building out your React front end. And then you start getting more into the Prisma stuff. And then you start getting more into the GraphQL stuff. And then eventually you deploy it. And then eventually you get off. But it's like a sequence that walks you from each piece. So by the end, you have the whole application in your head, but you didn't have to, like, worry about all the bits at the end until you got to the end.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, because it's, like, not until you teach somebody who's, like, not all that familiar with web programming until you remember, like, oh, wait, there's actually a bazillion things that you have to do all at the same time, and it's super hard to pick all this stuff up simultaneously. So that makes a lot of sense to introduce it bit by bit.
Yeah, and I'm someone who was going through a web boot camp when I was first getting into Redwood. So, like, I was also kind of learning I was doing these other tutorials and kind of trying to learn, like, how to connect a React front end to Express, like, API with, you know, Redux and all this other nonsense. And it just, like, didn't make any sense at all. And then I started going through the Redwood tutorial, and I was just like, this just makes sense. Like, at every point in the journey, it made sense.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so let's see. We talked about deployment. And then, like, well, let's okay, so the tutorial takes you through React, and then what does it introduce to you after that?
Then you start doing Prisma. So Prisma is kind of integrated into the Redwood CLI. So first off, there is a Redwood CLI that does a lot of the kind of generating commands you would expect from something like Rails, as, like, a scaffold commands and all that kind of stuff that can give you a whole CRUD interface. And after you start doing your React front end, then you start doing, you write your post model. So you just write a single model for a blog post, and that's in your Prisma schema. And then you run some Prisma commands to create a migration. So it creates a whole bunch of SQL to set up your tables for that post. And then you run another Prisma command to actually apply the migrations, and you're set up for, like, SQLite out of the database, out of the box while you're in development. So it's all just with SQLite. And then once you set up your database, then you run the scaffold command, which allows you to just, like, create blog posts and have your whole kind of blog interface.
Maybe we could zoom in for a second on Prisma, because, like, I've done Rails almost exclusively since, like, 2011, but there was a brief period in, like, 2014, 15 when I was doing some Node and Express stuff. And I was just, like, I was somewhat aghast at the level of, how to put it, immaturity sounds, like, kind of too derogatory, but I guess that's really what it is. I don't mean that in a negative way necessarily. It was just early days for all that stuff. And I was using Express at the time, and there was, like, nothing that was even close to, like, Rails Active Record. I couldn't even really find a Node ORM that was, like, anywhere beyond, like, a very, very early type thing. And it sounds like maybe that has changed since then. That was, like, 5-6 years ago now at this point. Is Prisma, like, a full-featured ORM, and can you talk about, like, some of the stuff that it does? And it sounds like it might even be, like, okay, so they're calling themselves, like, a next-gen ORM or whatever it was. Is there anything actually to that? And if so, what is that next-gen part?
Yeah, I would say definitely first off that within the last 2 or 3 years, there's been quite a lot of development in the Node ecosystem around ORMs. So the other ones that are fairly well known now are SQLize and Type ORM, and those are also fairly sophisticated. And Prisma, what's really cool about it is that when they say next generation ORM, the reason why they mean that is because it's eventually going to be able to work with both relational databases and document databases. So that's really the next generation part. And we're not in that generation yet. We're kind of still getting there. But the thing that's really cool about it is that it is able to decouple your database in a way where you are just kind of creating the models and they're going to be able to figure out how to map between a relational and a NoSQL kind of thing. So first off, let me break apart, like, there's the Prisma client and Prisma migration, and those are kind of like the two different pieces that are important to know about from, like, especially from an active Rails kind of background, because the Prisma migrate is what's doing like the actual important stuff that you would think of an ORM doing in terms of like doing your table migrations, you know, whereas the Prisma client is what's mapping your model and your JavaScript and letting you do all the kind of database stuff by importing a Prisma client. So that's kind of like where Prisma is at. It's a lot of things. It's really complicated. It's also a company with various other projects that can be integrated with it, like Nexus and stuff. So it's a lot of stuff.
Okay. Another aspect of Node development back when I was doing it was it seemed that kind of the default backend choice, the default data store choice, was something like Mongo, a document database. And again, not being in the JavaScript world, the Node world and stuff like that for a long time, is that still a popular like default choice for a data store, or are people more reaching for something like PostgreSQL these days?
It's an interesting question because I would say it really depends where you're coming from and what you just learned in the first place and kind of like what you were trained in, because some people are given like the MERN stack and the MEAN stack, which is just Mongo, Express, Node, and then some kind of front end. Could be Angular, could be React, could be Vue. And they just like learn how to build an app. They learn how to build a full stack app with Mongo and it works. And it's like, it's good for them. And they don't have to think about a lot of stuff you have to think about with SQL. So they just never bother with it, you know? Because they don't really realize like exactly what they're not getting by not having a relational database. Because if you never used it, it's hard to actually understand the difference between the two of them. So Redwood is relational entirely by default right now. It's essentially only really works in a relational way because of Prisma. Prisma only works with relational databases. This is what I say about Prisma eventually going to get to the point where it can be used with a Mongo. Lots of people want to be used with a Mongo, and lots of people want to use Redwood with Mongo, and was asking for Mongo support all the time. But right now, we're like, no, this is the way to go. Like, we'll get to Mongo eventually, but this is the way to go for now. So yeah, it's a really interesting discussion.
Yeah. You know, I go through periods. I think, like, you know, as you get older, you start to have these experiences. Like, I go through these periods of anger and frustration when I see like a wave of junior developers come in and they're given certain advice that's not necessarily very good advice. Like, my big thing I've been ranting on a bunch lately is service objects in Rails, because a lot of junior developers have developed this idea that the way to organize your code in Rails that you don't put in a controller or model is to use service objects. People have heard me talk about this ad nauseum on this podcast. So that's my like unhealthy fixation right now. And then my unhealthy fixation like 5 years ago was the whole Mongo thing. And it's one thing to like say that, and this is similar to what I've said about service objects. It's one thing to say, okay, I understand PostgreSQL very well. I understand Mongo very well. I'm weighing all the pros and cons of these for my use case, and I'm going to choose Mongo. Like, that's great. But what was happening back at this time was, people were just saying, oh, relational databases are old and yucky, and I'm not going to do that anymore because that's like the old way. I'm going to do it this new, better way using a document database. But it wasn't really like an informed decision. So I'm glad to hear that maybe there has been some more maturity around that decision making as the years have gone by.
Yeah, totally. And that's why part of Redwood, even though it's integrating all these kind of like new cutting edge pieces of tech, it's also doing it with really stable, battle tested tech as well, like Postgres databases. So it's saying like we don't need to like sacrifice all this other stuff that we've already built up just to jump into this whole React world. We can figure out ways to integrate these two universes.
So where would you find the bulk of the code in a Redwood project, if that makes any sense? Would the bulk of it be in the React portion of it, or would it kind of be equally distributed on the front end or back end? Or is it maybe even a question that doesn't really make that much sense?
It's definitely a question that makes sense. The answer is it depends on what you're building with it, what you're trying to get out of it, and whether you want to use other frameworks as well. So some people really like the Redwood API and the whole GraphQL part of it, but they think the website is kind of lacking in comparison to something like a Next.js. And for people who aren't familiar with Next.js, it's a React framework that does like tons and tons of amazing stuff for you in terms of server-side rendering and static generation, just like dealing with all the kind of stuff that goes along with dealing with pages in like a modern web application. So it does a ton of stuff right now that Redwood can't necessarily do and that we'll be able to do at some point in the future. But some people who are building real-world applications today with Redwood choose to write Redwood entirely with the API and then not use the web folder at all and then use like Next as the front-end part. But other people will have a very minimal API and will build a very complicated built-out web front-end. It really just depends what you want to do with it, what you want to build with it.
Okay. This has been great because it's helped me like talk about these things and be exposed to these technologies that I never otherwise would be exposed to. And I've, you know, I love it when somebody can say like, oh, and we use blah, blah, blah tool. And I'm like, what's that? Netlify, what's that? So that's great. And it's broadening and very helpful. And I hope it's been broadening for the listeners too. Where can people go to find wherever you would like to send them to find more about you, to find more about Redwood, any of that stuff?
Yeah, Redwood.js. You can just go to redwoodjs.com and that'll get you to either our docs or our community forum or our Discord. We're really a very community focused in the sense of like we want to get people involved. We want to like get contributors. We want to make it open to anyone who wants to contribute, wants to get involved, because we really enjoy building Redwood with everyone. I'm someone who was just like saw it, thought it was cool, started doing stuff with it, and have got like more and more involved in it and deeper and deeper into it to the point of, you know, getting onto the core team. And it's been awesome for me in terms of just like getting me opportunities and, you know, like getting foot in the door with like certain job offers and things like that. So yeah, it's been really incredible. And if you want to find me, I am at AJCWebDev on Twitter or GitHub or dev.2. I have like the same handle on all of them.
All right. And we'll put all that stuff in the show notes, of course. Anthony, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a blast.